I'ma bring change. Even if I gotta do it 2 cents at a time, I feel too much pain. So don't you dare try to tell me everything's fine. I'ma bring change. Even if I gotta do it 2 cents at a time, I feel too much pain. So I'ma bring change.
Welcome to the Together for Change series. I'm your host, Marvin Okello. Following the untimely death of George Floyd in 2020, I've taken on the role of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Accessibility Manager for the Halifax Wanderers. As of January 2021, we started the podcast as a means of continuing the conversation in a safe space. Our aim is that by having these tough and sometimes awkward conversations, we can begin to break down barriers and strengthen a culture of diversity and inclusion. We would like to acknowledge that the land on which the Wanderers Grounds office and training facility is located is the unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people. Today, I'm joined by Aaron McLeod. Aaron is a professional soccer player who's represented Canada 119 times at the senior level and was recently inducted in the Canadian Soccer Association's all-time starting 11. Aaron is also known for her work in DEI as a change maker. She recently took on a contracted role with local soccer club Halifax City to help them to continue to navigate their DEI and community efforts. Aaron is an incredible soccer player, but more importantly, she's someone who kids can look up to as a community leader and mentor who leads by example. She is willing to talk the talk and walk the walk. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
No worries. It's my pleasure. I honestly still feel honored that you reached out to me because I'd been thinking about reaching out to you at some point. So the universe works in mysterious I can't thank you enough for sending that email and for this friendship that we've started and this partnership and in this journey of not just DEI, but in the beautiful game.
Of course.
So how are things going with you? Where are you at currently as we're speaking?
So I currently live in Iceland. I'm still kicking a ball around. I play for Stjarnan, which is an Icelandic football club. And I've been here basically since the end of January. So I retired from the national team, but I'm playing a little bit more and I'm busy with a lot of stuff. I do a lot of like goalkeeper work here and just got my B license. And so still very involved in the game and also involved with, as you mentioned, Halifax City Soccer Club.
Awesome. And when you say B license, is that a national B or like a UEFA?
National B. Yesterday I had a nice chat with Jim Laughlin to wrap it up. And it was pretty cool, actually. We talked about leadership and character more than anything else when it comes to coaching. And that made me happy.
That's awesome. Honestly, I recently, as I told you, have been taking on the coaching mantle, and I'm a little further down the license ladder. So I'll be getting my C license here soon. But no, all the coaching stuff that I thought was so much more about tactical and technical, but those two words, like you said, leadership and what was the other one again?
But leadership and character. Yeah, were big ones.
Big time. And like, even in my short time in the last few weeks as a coach, like I've had to be a leader and show my character in more than I've had to, you know, talk about soccer. It's crazy how those two words are way, way more important than actually knowing soccer and how to kick and all those things. And so what was it specifically to leadership that, if you don't mind elaborating at all, that you kind of were discussing?
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with your point. I think coaching is at this, pretty cool time in history where you can't ignore mental health. You can't ignore race. You can't ignore gender. You can't ignore certain things in a coaching environment when you're trying to create an environment that provides psychological safety, right? That's where we blossom as human beings, when we know we can be seen for who we are and what we bring to a team, right? So I think that part, but also, you know, my role. I'm very proud of being part of the Olympic 2021 team. But what I found is I was an alternate, you know, and coming home with a gold medal and being an alternate and not actually seeing any playing time, but also feeling like was a big part of that. But also choosing to feel a part of that and kind of talking about the role of every player on a team. And I'm a huge believer because I've played every role on every team, right? I'm 40 years old and I, I've been on the bench, you know, as playing right bench, as I called it, for years, and starting a lot, and being a sub, being an alternate. And so I played every single role. And what I recognize is, whatever role you're given, a good leader, I think, empowers you to embrace it. And instead of seeing it as, you know, like John Herdman was the first person to call a substitute, or that I had heard anyway, a game changer or finisher, and or an impact player. And for me, it was a small thing, but I'm a huge, you know, proponent of inclusive language, but any type of language can be really empowering. So for me, a lot of it was that, like, give everybody a role, be adaptable, be available to your players. And then, of course, something, you know, I've become an activist really in the last, you know, 6 or 7 years, or for a big part of my life. But I do really think that it's about having a voice for everyone, seeing everyone, and how important that is. And for a coach to show that every day, I think is, in my opinion, a true leader.
100%. And you really exude that in a lot of ways. But the things that I really want to take away from that is, you know, it's great to see that sport is now having a role in things like DEI and in, you know, society, because, you know, when you were younger, and I'd like to start there, you know, it wasn't the case, you know, and athletes, you know, we've seen the popular quotes like shut up and dribble and things like that, that, you know, athletes being trying to be muted to just stick to your sport and just that, and you're not allowed to have a voice and you're not allowed to have an opinion on certain matters because that's not your field, quote unquote, both figuratively and literally. So it's, I love that we're able to have these conversations, that there are these platforms for education, through sport. So I want to take it way back though, before we get there. So that'll be the kind of the end of the journey. So let's spice it back. And when you were young, how did you get involved in soccer, which is what we call it here in Canada, for all our international viewers that are like, why are they calling it that? It's just, you get corrected too often here. If you say football, you mean the other one that should have never inherited the name, but we'll refer to it as soccer because that's just what's relevant to most of our audience. But how did you get a start in soccer?
Yeah, so I've told this story many times, but honestly, you know, my growing up, we were pretty strict about TV in our house, and you had to do chores around the house literally to get TV time. But the Olympics were this, like, you could watch Olympics all day, and normally Olympics, like, they replay it, so it's, you know, a couple weeks. And so we were really, you know, I have two sisters, and we were like very keen on watching the Olympics for a lot of reasons, but mostly because we could watch TV all day. I will never forget. It was 1983. Okay. I know I'm aging myself, but it was 1988. I was born in 1983. I'm 5 years old, and with my sisters and my parents, and we are watching, you know, in our living room, on one of those like old school box TVs, watching Elizabeth Manley, a Canadian figure skater, compete at the 1988 Calgary Winter Olympics. And
where I was born.
Nice. So it was a great year. But also, like, I remember watching her on TV. And first of all, it was the first female I had ever seen on TV. And I'll come back to that. But anyway, I remember watching her perform, and she was unbelievable. And of course it's in Calgary, right? So that everybody in the stands is Canadian. So the Canadian players are going wild when the music dies down, and she's like bawling her eyes out because she just had the performance of her life. And my parents were crying. We're softies, the McLeods, but my parents were crying. We're all crying. We're like, oh my God. And in that moment, I was like, I don't know what this Olympics thing is, but I want to go. Like, I don't know how I'm going to get there. I don't know, but I'm going. And and that's one thing I look back and I'm really, like, you know, proud of, if I can toot my own horn. I'm proud of myself because I was so determined. And again, I didn't know. I tried everything. I tried like Taekwondo. I tried basketball, which I love basketball. I started T-ball, and I got into like all these different random sports, and I fell in love almost immediately with soccer and basketball. And
pause there real quick. Like, I love that because it's one thing that comes up a lot with athletes is like playing other sports makes you a better player at that sport you're trying to excel in. You know, and hearing you say that just reaffirms that belief that I have that, you know, to be a good soccer player, you got to round yourself in basketball and in football, whatever other sports you can, tennis, you said taekwondo, all those things just help you to become a better soccer player. So I just wanted to pause quickly on that one.
Yeah, no, I absolutely, I'm totally a believer in multi-sports, and that was a huge part of my upbringing. And I love playing different sports and they absolutely helped me. You know, I was really into badminton for a long time and it absolutely helped me as a goalkeeper, you know? And I think any sport that you do really has a way of complementing the other. And I do, you know, I do think we specialize too early and it's leading to a lot of burnout and a lot of dropout for young athletes.
Mm-hmm. Completely agree. And like, I get frustrated when I hear coaches say, I've heard this, and I think we've all heard it at some point, you need to pick one, you know,
yeah.
And it's the worst advice you can give a young athlete, especially, you know, between, you know, 5 and like, for me, 16, like explore, like figure it out.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is selfishness from parents, whether they want to admit it or not, for wanting their kid to do the sport that they did.
Right.
Which is a tough thing as adults to realize that that's not our job as parents and right. As adults is to make our kids smaller versions of ourselves, but it's to allow that freedom to choose their own path. So it's great that it sounds like your parents allowed you to do that.
Yeah, I have to and I try to give a shout out to my parents every podcast that I'm on, because they really were just so supportive and all of my choices with sport. They saw that I was determined and committed. You know, for a little stint, my whole family, we moved to Indonesia, and I was in the 10th grade, and I knew I wasn't going to get a soccer scholarship playing in Indonesia. No one's going to look at the Jakarta International School at that time anyway. And things were different. Like, we didn't have access to videos and phones, all that stuff that we do now. And so I moved back to Canada and lived with my grandma so that I could play at a higher level soccer at home and get noticed. So my parents have been, I could not ask for more supportive parents. And yeah, they put me in everything. So
that's awesome. That's kind of very similar to one of our current players, Thiago Coimbra, who's Brazilian, but also lived in BC, but his parents let him move to be able to dive into his love of soccer at such a young age. And like, I commend parents who allow their children to make such decisions, like, you know, because look at where you are now. And even with Thiago, you know, playing with us, he played at Palmeiras in Brazil for a while. And, you know, it's we need more parents being flexible with their children and supporting their children. So shout out to your parents for sure. But so you played multiple sports how did you eventually land on soccer? Like, when did you figure out like, okay, this is my sport?
I think I really love basketball, but I kind of got thrown into goal basically because my good friend, I was 13, and my good friend, who normally was a goalkeeper, was hurt that day. Her name was Krista Barber. I still remember that. And so I would go in for her. I was like, I'll go in for you, because she was my friend, because no one ever wanted to go into goal, you know. And I think it's changing, but at the time, like, everyone would be like, don't put me a goal. And that's kind of like that changed everything for me. I fell in love with it immediately, but it was different. It was like I could be part of a team sport, but also have a lot of like individualized technical work. And I love the attention to detail. So that I kind of knew quite young that I was very, very passionate about it. But also, you know, I was one of the youngest ones. I was the youngest player on the under 15 Alberta provincial team. And same with the under 17 team. I kind of like, I not only did I love it, but I kind of, I guess when you're young, you like don't really know if you're good, if you just love it so much. So I didn't really focus on that. But I was always getting asked to play up and play for different teams. And so I just kind of like flowed with that. And I always play basketball. Even through high school, I always managed to play both, which I loved, because soccer was like it was becoming more and more serious. And I always had a sport like basketball. I still did track and badminton. Nice. I always had other sports that like, it was more just like, I just enjoyed it, you know. Yeah. It was just more fun. And it was important for me to have both. But yeah, I kind of knew I was so driven and quite like narrow focused that like, I don't think I focused on how good I was. I just focused on getting to the national team, really.
That's awesome. We have so many overlaps, Aaron. Like badminton was a big part of my life in junior high and high school. Like, you know, humble brag, provincial champ between grade eight, all the way to grade 12.
Fantastic.
So especially in high school, it was cool playing, you know, men's doubles grade 10 and then switch to mixed doubles grade 11, won provincials again and switch back to men's doubles grade 12. And, you know, so no, it's just to say that like, you can have those other sports you like, you know, and it's not a
totally
bad thing, you know, and I knew soccer was my go-to, but ultimately playing badminton and all those other things took the pressure off of when I played soccer because I was more relaxed and I wasn't only ever thinking about soccer and getting better at soccer and kind of gave you that mental freedom to just have fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. And when you were a kid, obviously things have changed quite a bit and that's going to be, you know, an ongoing part of our conversation is how progressive things are, but how things were not very progressive when we were young. What were some of your biggest challenges as a young you?
Well, I think like a lot of times when you're young, you don't really like think about, and not just young, any age, you don't really think about how things are or why things are the way that they are. And I wasn't so much like curious. I know I was like very driven towards like my own success, but there was some things like I remember going into national team camp and I still think there's a few photos. One always sticks in my head of like Diana Matheson where like she's literally wearing a jersey that is so big that it's like almost like touching her feet. And, you know, we got the hand-me-downs from the men's team and we just kind of knew there was no funding and we'd stay in these like super dodgy hotels and I don't know, but it also like, I don't know how to say it. I was so like happy and proud to be with the national team that I was just like happy to be there, you know? Like I remember one hotel that there was like cockroaches and there was like, it was totally disgusting. And I just was like, you know, this was part of it. But like looking back, you know, I can think of like big moments in my own career, but also like the history of women's soccer and like we in that under 19 championship, which was like 2000, you know, at the beginning of 2000, it's like they had it in Commonwealth Stadium. And all of us were like, why would you do that? It's like a 50,000, 60,000 capacity stadium. And we thought like four people were going to show up. And I don't know who was more surprised, like, I don't know who was more surprised. Probably us, the athletes, when we, you know, we sold out the last game, we were like, what?
You sold it out.
We couldn't believe it, you know? Yeah. And that was kind of the beginning. Like Sinclair was on that team. Carl Lang was on that team. Carmelina Moscato. Like you go through the list of a lot of people that made an impact then, but are still making an impact on the game now. And so I think, I always kind of think that Canada is an interesting place, you know, we're progressive in a lot of ways, but we have a long way to go, I think, with women's sports.
100%. And it's something that I think it's important for a lot of people to realize because there's this almost facade in Canada that because of our neighbors down south kind of being behind us in a lot of ways and not being at the same spot we are in terms of being progressive as a country and even in sport that, oh, we're doing great, you know, but that's, I it's like my parents have always taught me, never compare, you know, just look at yourself and see what am I doing that I could be doing better? Not, oh, I'm doing better than that person, therefore I'm doing good, because it's all relative, you know. Even at the women's national program, you look at that, the U.S. is further than us in a lot of ways in terms of know, equal pay and all these things. So even though as a society in America, you know, they're behind us, there's in football and soccer, they're miles ahead of us. And especially in the women's program, actually in the men's program as well, to be honest, even from a sport perspective. And they're the ones that we're trying to chase. I think the men have done a great job of closing that gap recently. And the women have always been very close on par with the women competitively and stuff. But I hope that we catch up to them on the equal pay and the support that they receive from the governing body there.
Yeah. I mean, I have to, I have to give props to, I had a conversation with like Ashlyn Harris, who is, for those who don't know, been a goalkeeper for the US national team for a really long time, has recently retired. And it's kind of always interesting when we obviously all have our unconscious biases and our own prejudice. And I've always seen myself as a feminist, but I remember speaking to her and the way that she just expected to be paid for the same thing that the men national team players were doing. And it was just how it should be, and didn't give it a second thought. And it was kind of the first time that I realized most of my career, you know, really speaking to, you know, being a female in the sport, is like, I just accepted less. My whole career, I've accepted less. And that's how it's been, you know, and it's been, and, you know, you can spend your whole life being a victim or feeling, you know, like you've been shortchanged or whatever else. But it was kind of the first time where I recognized that I didn't believe or that I had to question myself, like, do I deserve to get the same amount? Like, and why not? So that was like, I was really grateful for not just her, but a few of the U.S. national team players that really like, really, you know, walk the walk, talk the talk about gender equity and what that really meant. And that I actually had my, because of the sport environment, I actually wasn't there yet. So I was really grateful for a lot of those interactions.
That's awesome. And honestly, you mentioned a couple of the names, Christine Sinclair, who everyone knows, you know, is the GOAT in Canada women's soccer. But another one that I want to dive into is Kara Lang. She was one of the first female soccer players that I watched play. Especially on TV, you know, and I have three sisters. I don't know if you know that, but two of them, you know, are really into soccer. One of them, not so much, but my youngest sister, Diana, who is more into volleyball, seeing Kara Lang playing was the thing that made her go, maybe I do want to get into soccer like my siblings. And Kara was so outspoken for change. She was ahead of her time in a lot of ways in terms of advocating for women's soccer, not just for Canada, but just even on a global stage. Do you have any friendship or connection with Kara Lang?
Yeah, I mean, I think the cool thing about the national team is it's a very accepting and open and wonderful, inclusive environment. It wasn't, I mean, I'm 40, like I said, and like, it wasn't always that way, but I do remember when Kara came on, you know, she was 15 when she like, but she was, like always like wise beyond her years, you know? And yeah, I mean, I've always thought very highly of Kara. She's kind of always done her own thing in the sense, you know, like she was the first vegan that I knew of. I was like, oh, you're vegan. How can you be vegan being an athlete? And, you know, just like simple things like that. But she just like, yeah. And she was always like very outspoken, and it's become, I think, a big part of the national team. You know, I know, for example, not that long ago, during the gold medal tour, you know, we were coming together as a team to end violence for our own federation to acknowledge, you know, that there had been some sexual harassment and assault in the organization that they knew about and didn't even want to acknowledge. And, you know, and that was just one thing, you know. Of course, you know, as you said, in response to George Floyd and so many things around Black Lives Matter, like, you know, as a team, we were kneeling and doing things because it was the right thing to do. And when you're putting on a shirt, you're representing every person in the country. And part of that is like, of course, I'll never understand what it's like to be Black, to be this, to be that, but like, we have to make sure that we are representing everyone. So I think that's become like a big part of who we are. I'm really grateful for that. There's a lot of players that I can think of that have been really outspoken. I always have to mention Quinn in a sense that, you know, when they came out, I was like, I didn't know anything about the trans community. I didn't have the language. I didn't have the vocabulary, the understanding. And kind of like what I mentioned before, it kind of made me look in the mirror. And like I mentioned before, what was the first female I saw on TV as an athlete was Elizabeth Manley. And at that point, I was so confused and I didn't know why, but it was because I didn't understand gender. I didn't understand it because I was like, there's only men playing professional sports, you know? And so I was like, am I supposed to be a guy? You know, like it was confusing.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, on that point, like, I want to tie two things you just said there. So, you know, about the right thing to do. And this is what the difference for me and a lot of people who work specifically in DEI, do what everybody else knows they is the right thing to do. Just a lot of people do what the easy thing to do is instead.
Right.
Because doing the right thing a lot of times is the tough thing. And that's where people don't do it because like, I know that that's the right thing to do, but it's hard for me to do that. So therefore I'm going to do the easy thing. And ultimately, like, that's what the majority are doing as well. And that's something that I've almost had with every guest is it's about, you know, helping bridge that gap between the minority and the majority, because so many times we follow the past, we follow what everybody else is doing. But I'm happy to be a part of a time and meet people like yourself who are willing to do the tough thing, which is the right thing, even though everybody else knows that that's what you should do, you know, and then mix that in with the women's soccer and what you said about how, you know, not even getting equal pay and even just asking to get the same things that men get. Like it should mm-hmm. be straightforward. And to me, it's that same mentality of it's the right thing. And we all know that it's the right thing, but because it's difficult financially, because they don't get the same audiences yet, because they don't have the same support and sponsors and whatever, people are like, it's hard to support women's soccer, but most people, and I can't say everybody, because some people still are, you know, misogynistic and living in a backwards time and don't think that women deserve it. But I think the majority of people now know that it's the right thing to do. They just don't know how to, or they choose not to support it because it's tough.
Right. Right. And I do think I agree with that, but I think it becomes kind of sad and I'll admit to also being like this, you know, like when you kind of believe these social norms and social constructs to be the truth, for me, that's sad, you know, like, and I don't want to live like that. And, you know, I'm in a space now, like, as you mentioned, I'm an EDIA consultant at Halifax City Soccer Club. And I'm trying to dive into so many courses and learn more. And so that I'm making sure that I know what I'm doing. And it's like, part of it is empowering because I'm like, there's so much that I don't know.
But the more it's like almost saddening.
Yeah. And then I'm like here I am like doing the history of the pride flag, for example, and just oppression, you know, and like oppression exists everywhere, but oppression really at the end of the day, like it exists because of fear, because people have like, you know, they're afraid of others. They think that it's like we're like the world is a pizza and there's only a few slices. You know what I mean? And that's mm-hmm. not how it works. Like love and abundance is real. We just have to like go towards a lot of like really hard topics. Like I've had some really uncomfortable conversations with people that I love about their prejudice.
Mm-hmm. And that's
you
why.
You know, and sometimes, sorry.
I'm sorry, not to be interrupt, but like that's why I love that. In a time like now, we're able to hop on, you know, podcasts and have these tough and sometimes awkward conversations, like I said in the intro, you know, and by having these types of conversations, which there should be more of them happening, that's how we actually unearth the change that we're after.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think like, you know, and I'm a white person and recently I've been taking a few like anti-racism courses and I feel uncomfortable mm-hmm. when I'm taking some of it. I can feel myself being defensive and I would consider myself pretty open-minded. And I know I understand privilege and, you know, but I also think that I know it's like, I know I'm doing the right thing in my gut mm-hmm. that I'm feeling this way, you know, and to be okay with like understanding that I have to learn more. That I have to be better and that I can choose to not use my voice or I can choose to use my voice.
And being and comfortable being uncomfortable too is a big part of it. And it's so funny totally. That people see it okay when they're working out and that like, oh, I'm, you know, I'm struggling with lifting these weights, but I'm going to push through and my body hurts and all these physically uncomfortable things. And they're able to understand that they have to push through it to get to the next stage of their fitness. And one thing I actually just heard recently that was, I thought, brilliant. And I'm I shifted immediately after I heard this to how I approach mental health. There's this guy who called it mental fitness is how we should call it.
Yeah, I love that.
Because, you know, once you start thinking of it as mental fitness, you'll think of it as like the gym where there's going to be good days and there's going to be bad days. And that is ultimately mental health. You know what I mean? It's something that we have to work at every day. If you stop working at it, it's like the gym. You know, you stop going to the gym for a year, you're going to gain some weight. Your body's going to lose all the progress that you made. And mental health is like that. It's mental fitness. And I think that approach can be applied to a lot of things. But you mentioned being a consultant for Halifax City Soccer. How and when did that start?
So my older sister, her daughter is in the program, and I think all three kids are actually at Halifax City Soccer Club. And we kind of just started chatting, and to be honest, it was a couple things. It was that I've been playing soccer my whole life. I miss my family all the time. So now I get to talk to my family more often. So it's a win there. But at the time, like when I had just kind of like retired from the national team, I moved here and I was kind of thinking about like what next steps, you know, and as I mentioned, I'm an activist and I'm like, what can I do when I'm passionate about this, and how can I make an impact? Because it's nice when you're playing, right? Because you're, whether you want to be or not, you're a role model and you have that opportunity to use your platform. But then, you know, it gets to a point where you're like, okay, how can I actively make a difference? And what I recognize, and Canadian Women in Sport is a fantastic organization that does a lot of wonderful research. And same with CCES. I mean, I could name a bunch of them, but and the Respect Group. And I was reading through a lot of their research and just recognizing the dropout rate for especially girls and gender diverse individuals between 13 and 18 in sport. And it's not necessarily like rocket science. Like if you look at why they're dropping out, it's because they don't feel like connected to the group. There's, you know, like they don't feel welcome, like a lot of things that I'm like, this is just like, why aren't we educating these young girls and gender diverse individuals on how to be more inclusive, on how to understand, like, you know, pronouns or mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is, so that they're actually leading this instead of you know, we're putting a lot of attention into the coaches and everyone else, which is also very important, don't get me wrong, but I'm like, why don't we empowering these young people? Because they eventually will be the leaders of our community. And so that's kind of how the conversation started. I talked to Kieran Collins, the director of soccer there. I kind of said, this is what I want to do. I want to retain more girls and gender diverse folks in sport. So can I do this? And part of that was started to talk about mental health and inclusive language, and how do we make sure that new Canadians have more access to sport? What about athletes with intellectual disabilities? What about what barriers exist in sport that are keeping people out of sport? And kind of like what I said, like the more I was learning, the less I know, obviously, and I don't know Halifax. So at first I was like a zombie. I was just like researching as much as I could. And I knew I was at the right spot because I was nervous, excited, completely uncomfortable. It's evolved now. Like now we've tripled our number of female coaches at the club. And now I'm doing education, like coaching education for them, because I want to make sure that they have the tools and support that they need to be not, you know, it's not just about numbers. I've had a lot of female coaches that maybe, you know, like got there because they're female. I want these coaches.
Quality over quantity.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of evolving, but I'm really grateful for it.
That's awesome. And you've mentioned it a few times, you know, I mean, in terms of being inclusive language and being an activist. And I do want to definitely acknowledge, you know, that you are queer, you know, and how did you approach that, like in terms of the feelings you probably had, and then acknowledging those both to your family and then probably on a public stage, because now, you know, you're representing the country and stuff, it's a tough thing to talk about, but you make it seem so easy.
Well, it's kind of funny. So I don't know if you've seen any pictures of me in the under 19 tournament where I had like a very colorful mohawk, and I still get
I
like,
remember watching on TV with that colorful mohawk, to be honest.
okay. I still get heat for that. And people were like, you didn't know you were gay? And I was like, all right, everybody. You know what I mean? And like, and I didn't know at that stage, but everyone else in Canada knew actually. So anyway, no, but I didn't really know, but to be honest, it wasn't really like, it wasn't something discussed, you know, and it wasn't really like, I don't know. I when I was starting to figure it out, I didn't really know anybody who was like, it's interesting now because I have some people in my family that are openly gay now, but you know, I had people in my family that always had their best friend with them, and I didn't think twice about it. You know, I was like, that's just their best friend or their roommates, you know, and like, and looking back, I'm like, oh, that's who that was. But you know what I mean? You're like,
Hindsight's
oh, got it.
20/20,
Yeah, I was like, I didn't catch on. So I was someone's roommate, I guess, for all. No, but so I kind of knew, like, I didn't really know it was even like an option. I just knew that something was different with me, you know, because like I had a few like really great boyfriends, and I was just like, is this it really? Like, you know, there's like every poem, almost 90% of poems and songs in history are like talking about love, and you know, and I'm like, oh, this is really it. Like, I just felt like something was missing, right? And you know, and then I fell for my first girlfriend, and then everything. I was like, I just felt like everything kind of made a little bit more sense. But at the time, you know, this was before or the middle of university when I kind of came out. But at the time, I only knew of Mark Tewksbury, who is, I think he just got the Order of Canada not long ago. He was a swimmer for Canada, an Olympian who came out in the 90s, which is like
Way
unheard of.
underground.
And then literally you didn't hear about anyone else like for so long. And then in 2014, the Sochi Olympics, there was a lot of like homophobia propaganda. You weren't allowed to, you couldn't, you could be gay, but you couldn't show any like queerness or like while you're at the games, right? And I remember thinking that that was just wild. I'm like, when you're an Olympian, you train your butt off. And the people that support you, like, you don't get there alone. You do not get there alone. It's sacrifices, whatever, but your support network is everything. And I just remember thinking, like, that's a human right. It is my human right to be able to thank the person that I love the most in the world for helping me get there, you know? So for me, it just struck a chord because I knew that I was gay. Everybody knew that I was gay, but like, I wasn't like out in the public. And I know Anastasia Bustos, she was at Sochi, and she came out because she wanted to make a stand, and I thought it was so courageous. And kind of around the same time, I was doing a lot of like motivational speaking for we talked about TD Bank, and Ed Clark, who was like the CEO at the time, just like he offered all these same-sex benefits, like he was just ahead of his time, like a straight white dude, you know, and he was doing it because it was in his mind the right thing to do. And now TD Bank is still one of the most inclusive, progressive thinking organizations there is, you know. And I'll never, like, I my first few like openly gay chats were for TD Bank. And I got to like hold the Pan Am Games were in Toronto, and I got to hold the torch for Ed Clark. And it's like making me tear up now, but you know, that was massive for me. And what I recognized, and I'll never forget the conversation with my mom, because like mothers want to protect you, right? And she was like, what if, you know, like what if you get hate and this and that? And I was like, Mom, like people shouldn't have to come out. This is ridiculous. Like at some point, it wouldn't it be amazing if kids just grew up and just they follow their heart? Wouldn't that be like out of this world, you know? And when I said it that way, she was like, okay. And then I did. And then I don't know. And after you come out, like there's no other way to live. You know, the more you become your authentic self, like you start to recognize you deserve it.
No, that's, oh man. No, TD, first of all, shout out to them for what they've been doing and creating space and leading for other companies to understand that, again, they have a responsibility to allow people to just be themselves, you know, and you mentioned it again, it's just the right thing to do, you know, and going back to, you know, you make it seem so easy and like, you know, and being yourself and saying that you're queer and knowing that you're gay and all that. And for some, it's not obviously. Right. But I really appreciate you being so comfortable and being so candid, you know, and I'm hoping that, you know, other people listening to this will, if they're not comfortable yet talking about it, that they talk about it and they really realize that, like, yes, again, it'll be difficult. It will be hard initially, but the right thing to do usually is, you know, and it's not to say that I've always done the right thing, you know, and we briefly talked about this and you know, I've made mistakes that I've learned from and mistakes that, you know, have formed me to be the person who I am today, which included, you know, having a friend come out of the closet to me, you know, and I really, really struggle with how I dealt with it at the time. And, you know, it's easy to say that now. But at the time I didn't know what I didn't know, you know what I mean? And to dive into it, just for anybody who's like, what are you talking about, Marvin? I had a good friend in high school. And I grew up in Kenya, where it's very misogynistic, times and country and continent really. And, you know, we moved to Canada at a young age at 8, and then we moved to Fredericton initially was where we were, and then eventually Nova Scotia. And so all to say, I've gone through a lot of different changes in, you know, community and societies and cultures and everywhere as we've been to. So I struggled with, you know, imposter syndrome, knowing who am I? Like, what am I supposed to do in life? Mm-hmm. You know, well, who do I identify with? Even with groups like of friends, you know, am I with the athletes? Am I with the popular kids? I kind of floated in all these different groups because I didn't really feel like I belonged in any one of them. So, you know, I had this one friend who's also an athlete, and we had a lot of similarities and you know, we were there for each other in a lot of ways, but just as bros, as you know, so he came out to me first, before anybody else. And I was young, I was naive, I was stupid, and I didn't know how to deal with it. And I wasn't there for him. And, you know, it's one of my biggest regrets in my life is that I wasn't there for him. And I didn't make him feel comfortable coming out to me as the first person he ever came out to. And, you know, we're not friends to this day because of it. And I don't blame him for it, because I wasn't the supportive friend that he needed. And I just share this all to say that, like, you know, it's tough. It's tough to support people and things you don't understand. And that was my thing at that age. I was young. I didn't, you know, things weren't as open as they are now. And there wasn't that space to talk about these things. And so I just, you know, as a Christian too, because that's another part of my life, and Christians have really evolved in the last, you know, 15 years of being more accepting of everybody, you know, from gay to trans, whatever. And there's still a lot of work to be done in that space, but, you know, it's easy to just not support people, to not try to understand, to not have that conversation and try to understand the other person's perspective because it's foreign to you. It's hard to lean into it, to have the tough conversations, the awkward conversations I'm having with you now and many other people. But it means so much if you can just create that space and that support for somebody, even if you have no clue what they've been through. And you mentioned, you know, you don't know what being Black feels like, but you're still supportive. You know, you don't know what being trans feels like, but you're still supportive. And it's important to learn from our mistakes, you know, and I think I really, you know, I'm embodying that. We got a whole podcast about these topics now, and, you know, young me would be like, what are you doing?
Who is this guy?
Right. But all just to say that, like, we're not perfect. You know, I'm not perfect, and I don't think I hope nobody thinks that, like, you know, being in DI work, DEIA work, or being an activist, or you know, doing any of these things is it means that we're perfect and that we're flawless. No, the exact opposite. It's actually acknowledging that we're faultless, and you know that that we have made mistakes, but that we're continuing to learn and change and be willing to change through these tough and awkward conversations.
Oh, absolutely. I think even like, the more I learn in this space too, I'm like, I feel like, oh, wow, I'm just full of flaws. And I'm like, why did I believe history in all of our class? You know, like there's so many times where I like just, I kind of question everything. And I think that's like, if there's anything I could say to like my younger self would be to ask why. And you can do it in a respectful way, but just to be more curious about like even understanding social constructs. Like, you know, if we're lucky to have a kiddo, like I'm going to teach them social constructs like right away, because, you know, we put these boxes on so many things in life and they're not real. Like humans have created them, you know, and it just makes so many people unhappy at the end of the day, you know, and I think we kind of with those boxes, we lose our humanity. You know, like right now they're trying to ban like trans kids out of sport in the US. And we're talking about like, can you imagine looking at an 11 year old and say, you can't, there's no place for you here.
So something you have no control over.
Yeah, exactly. And I, so it's, you know, and I mean, don't even get me started on the US. They're burning and banning books. And I'm like, it's weird how history just constantly repeats itself unless we have people that are willing. And, you know, that's why it's so wonderful that you're doing what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like history repeats itself unless we have people who are courageous enough to go out there and talk about these things, have these uncomfortable situations, because, you know, in my head, all I'm thinking about is like concentration camps and like that's how it started with banning books, with, you know, like not allowing certain people have access to healthcare. Mm-hmm. I just, you know what I mean? So it's, it can be a scary world. And I think like to give yourself grace too with your friend, like when, like you said, you don't know what you don't know. And what I admire is that you've taken that situation, because I can remember a situation where my friend came out to me and I was like, what? And I didn't react in a very positive way because I was struggling with my own sexual orientation. Right. And so you're totally, if it was even closer now and it was scary, but like to give yourself grace, and you've done probably the most amazing thing that you can do now. Like now you're educating yourself. You're trying to make sure and connect with others. Like you're creating a group where you have people that are experts in literally like their own experience, and they bring that, and how we make sport more accessible and inclusive. And it's massive, you know, and I'm sure your friend would be so proud of you now, like to think about that, because we can't control a lot of things about like when we're born and what we're born into. But now we're at a stage where we have so much access to information that we can really, in a really positive way, steer our lives in a way that is, you know, like curious about the truth, what that truth is. Even when I was looking at the history of pride, like marginalized groups, they stay that way. Like they will continue to be marginalized groups unless, everyone wakes up, you know? So, it's a lot of work, but it's very, rewarding work. When you know more people are just getting access to things that everyone should have access to.
100%. And, you know, I hope that we continue to create other, you know, activists and other people who are willing to have these conversations. And honestly, I feel so happy knowing that, you know, even locally, there's, you know, my friend Sean Smith, who was at MMP, and, you know, we work together with the Wanderers to bring out different youth each game to their suite, you know, from Black youth to Indigenous youth, whatever. And now he's actually started his own podcast called The Black Loyalists.
Exploring
all these different areas in Nova Scotia and educating people about the history, because as you've just brilliantly said there, you know, history has a strange way of repeating itself. So it's important that we educate people on what that history was, so they know what to avoid repeating, because that's, you know, that's why they say ignorance is bliss, right?
Right, of course.
It's great to, you know, that you're inspiring people, and I'm happy that, you know, even here in the CPL, there's a Kevin who's a forward season ticket holder since year one. He's recently started his own podcast, you know, talking to CPL players about some of these topics and, you know, making sure that it's not just happening here in Halifax. And, you know, hopefully other teams will continue to have leaders in that space. And we see more change, not just, you know, in the CPL, but in Canada men's and women's soccer continue to develop. And, you know, big shout out to Herdman too, with what he did with the women's team. And now hopefully he's able to continue to replicate that on the men's side, you know, which needs a lot of change as we all know, but it's good that we have a champion like Herdman there. Can you tell me a little bit about your personal experiences with Herdman? Cause he's such
brilliant
in so many ways.
Yeah. I mean, I admire him. Yes. And talk about a high performer, like always the first one in, always the last one out. But I mean, I could talk a whole podcast about John. His mind is brilliant. He's brilliant, but he also works his butt off. And what I love, I credit him a lot for even starting my activism role, because I'll never forget the day. And it was like before a game, and I can't remember. We were playing a game in Canada, and he was just like, if you want your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your partner or whoever to come, they can come to this room after the game. And it was a small thing, but it was the first time in my life that a coach had acknowledged it in a way that like sexual orientation in a way that was just like whatever. Mm-hmm. And the impact that it had on me, that I could just show up and be myself, changed everything. And that's kind of when I started to recognize inclusive language and how impactful that is. So, you know, there was that, his work ethic, but also his ability, like his emotional intelligence is like through the roof, and his ability to make sure that every single person is on board. And like, if you were the person that didn't get 1 minute, like you had a role and like you were so proud to have that role. I have never met a more motivating human ever. Like if you have a chance to see that man speak, go see him speak. And that's what he did like every day. We had tactical meetings for like 2 years, like almost every day. And he like after everyone, I was like, yeah, let's go, you know, and he had that. It's amazing, really. And I'm just so grateful that I had the opportunity to work with him. He will always be someone that I look up to. And I think he's done just incredible things with both programs.
That's awesome. If you had to summarize him in one word, not to put you on the spot, one word that kind of just captures his essence and what he's done for you, like what would that word be?
I mean, I think determined. I've never met anyone. He's like, when he sets his mind to something and he sells you on it, that's it. There's like no other option. It's pretty remarkable.
That's awesome. And I did mention my friend Kevin, who started a podcast. If anyone's interested in checking that out, just to plug it, it's called The Hammer of Sparks. And that's Hammer of SPARX. Really great podcast as well. But one thing I want to go back to, you know, you're doing work with Halifax City, a contractor, and you work with Luke Berryman, who's one of our Wanderers U23.
Luke.
What's that like?
Luke is just fantastic. He is, one of the coaches, obviously. He's director of, well, like all of the, like the, you know, community group and the skills center. And he's in charge of a lot of coaches, a lot of players. But he also... has been fantastic in the EDIA space. He wanted, you know, we were kind of chatting and this is all his idea. And he came up with a plan to make sport more accessible to new Canadians. And new Canadians often like a couple of the big barriers are transportation and cost.
Yeah.
And so for him, he's like, I'm going to show up every night, every Friday at this time at the YMCA, and like just made it accessible, made it free. And I think now we have I think is it was it 100? I wrote it in that email.
Yeah, it's it was like 100. Yeah.
An insane amount of new registrations coming from this program. Mm. And it's all his idea. And I'm so grateful for him because he's just doing it. Like Luke is everywhere. And he's like playing for the Youth Wanderers team, right? And
the U23 like, team, yeah.
The U23 team. He's like getting his education. I'm like, what? I don't actually think the man sleeps, but but he's just, and it's, again, he's one of those, you talk to him and it's just because it is the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And he just knew there was a need for it. And he shows up and he's just made such a difference. And it's cool. Like what I'm learning, and I've learned this over, you know, a number of years, is like when you meet doers, you choose to continue to work with them because there's not a lot of them. And Luke Berryman is a doer. He said he was going to do this and he's done it. And I know he's going to continue to do incredible things in that community and in all of Nova Scotia and wherever he wants. It's really a pleasure working with him.
No, completely. He's a great guy. And I'm looking forward to meeting with him soon to continue to dive into the Wanderers, you know, New Canadians Night, which is going to its second year. Luke's a baller too, you know, and I hope he eventually, you know, represents us on the first team, but I can't commend him more than for his character. You know, he's such a commendable young man and he's wise beyond mm-hmm. his years. Cause you know, I'm 34 and you know, it took a lot of years for me to learn to be the person I am today. So for him to be doing what he's doing at such a young age is incredible. And you talked about access to transportation and cost being the two biggest barriers. That 100% was the case for me. You know, when we moved to Canada as refugees, like I selfishly, you know, think that I could have played at a CPL level or higher if I had access to more finances and even transportation. And that's not to put down on my parents. They did everything that I can to, you know, give me the platform that I have today and to be able to succeed. But they had three other kids to manage and they couldn't just focus on, you know, my soccer career. So they had to make sure we were all taken care of. But, you know, shout out to my parents for everything they did with the resources they had and stuff. But I hope that we continue to have, you know, organizations like TD who are doing things for financial access and removing those barriers for kids who are potential game changers in sport. You know, like Alfonso Davies is another great example of what can happen if you just give refugees a chance, you know, and I love to see the stuff that he's doing now, giving back to his community. And I commend you and others in the sport who are creating space for youth and other children to be able to have that opportunity to not only represent their country, but to give back to the sport that has given both of us so much, really, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, well, thank you. And I think, and I like we were talking about, I'm learning a lot and I think we do have a long way to go. Like I know, you know, for example, like when I'm looking at uniforms, you know, on a website, a Canadian website or a Canadian company, a lot of them don't have sports hijabs or they don't have long sleeve as an option. And there's things that I wouldn't have thought about years ago. But now I'm like, what does it mean to make a space inclusive? And I know that definition is different for everybody, but I definitely think we've come a long way. There's a long way to go. But I think, the coming together, like the work that you're doing is like even identifying barriers. Because a lot of times you don't, you know, as a white privileged person, I didn't encounter a lot of those barriers. And so I didn't even know for a long time, like what barriers existed. And so now it's about diving into those. How do we make it more accessible? But even I think, you know, I did an event with the Special Olympics, I want to say like 2 years ago. And I just wanted to show up as a professional athlete from the Orlando Pride and they asked me to speak. And I was like, okay. And I just, you know, said, you know, good luck everyone. And then had Mary Ellen get up there, who was a Special Olympian who had 50 gold medals and is like a total legend. And she sat there and talked about how she was just never given an opportunity as a kid to even try sports because they put her in a box and just assumed, like, because she had an intellectual disability that she wouldn't want to play. So anyway, I've had these like really fantastic, situations in my life where it's made me think, like, what am I doing? What can we do in sport to make sure that everyone really has a chance?
No, for sure. And to wrap it up, what are your short-term goals, you know, as somebody who's now an activist and a community leader, you know, even all the way from Iceland, and then we'll finish with your long-term, but first, what are your short-term goals as you continue to learn and dive into this?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm really grateful. Like some of the short-term goals, we wanted to increase girls and gender diverse individuals at the club. Another one would be to retain those, to increase the female and gender diverse folks as coaches, which we've already done. We have a partnership now with Special Olympics. We have a unified program where half the athletes with intellectual disabilities and athletes without intellectual disabilities are playing together. We wanted to increase newcomers, new Canadians to the program. That's all Luke. I'll give him that. He's been fantastic. And so a lot of this is like we've created more accessibility. But also now the next short-term goals will be, can we retain it? And then with the new memberships and new members and how do we increase the quality of their experience and how do we keep them wanting to come back? Because, you know, ideally you always want to have these people playing sport for life because it is so advantageous to health and mental health and everything else. So I would say those are kind of the short term to continue to invest in these programs that we've started.
Awesome. And your long-term goals.
This is a tough one.
And this one I'd frame differently. So this one I would say for Canada soccer.
For Canada soccer. I mean, I think I would love to, I can't help myself. I'm like, I email a lot of people and be like, you should do this and you should try this. And I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh my God. But again, just like more accessibility, more inclusive spaces. I think we kind of have to challenge the way that sport has been set up in our country. It's kind of like pay to play. I think it's to be blunt, I think it's ridiculous that just because you have money, you're going to these academies. And for me, that's not what sport is. Sport is about connection. It's about growth. It's about all these things. But if you're only getting, the rich, whatever percentage of people showing up, then for me, sport has lost most of its point. So for me, that's it. Yeah. Like, how can we increase accessibility? How can we be more inclusive? How can we get more people out to sport and committed for life? And really reducing the barrier of cost, because I think we're too often making it about it's a business. And I don't think that's not my approach at all.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Erin. This has been amazing. And I know this is the first of many. Well, it's not even the first. It's like the third conversation we've had. But I know that we're going to have many more conversations. And we're going to continue to work together for change. And I thank you for being on this journey with me and allowing me to learn from you as well. And I hope I did the same for you. And thanks for, you know, working with Luke Berryman from our U23s and with Halifax City to continue to, you know, share the message of inclusion and accessibility and diversity and equity and for everything that you're doing, not just in sport, but as a great human being, activist and all that you are and leading even in the queer space as well. And just being willing to have the tough and awkward and uncomfortable conversations as you continue to do.
Thank you very much. And thank you for having me. This has been awesome.